Hey there, it's Martin Kessler, and we're back with a very special episode of the 20 Minute Fitness Podcast today. The 20 Minute Fitness Podcast is all about actionable and evidence-backed health and fitness insights. Today, I sit down with Nick Rowe, a good friend of the podcast and someone I've worked alongside with for the past 6 months to structure some really awesome fitness challenges, all for the sake of science, of course. We've already released a show regarding Nick's cut, an intermittent fasting experiment back in December. And if you want to give that a listen, you can definitely find it if you head back to episode 251. In this episode, we discuss the effects of lean and dirty bulking on the body. You learn about the three different 30-day bulking challenges that I've put Nick through for the past 3 months, and which bulk served him better in terms of fat to lean mass ratio, his different methods of training, and some other myths that we really wanted to debunk with those challenges. We dive deeply into his results, and whilst we find many things that one would expect to find, we've also encountered a fair few surprises along the way. Finally, after months of arguably quite extreme challenges, Nick gives us his key takeaways for those looking to cut body fat, gaining lean mass, and even those looking to do both. Now, let's get on to the show. Hey Nick, how is it going?
Hi Martin, yeah, it's going good, thank you. How's it going for you?
Going well, it's a new year. You feel ready?
Yeah, I do. It was a bit of a shaky start. I managed to catch COVID on New Year's Eve, but I'm back and pretty much back to full health since.
Yeah, I think a lot of people here in the US were taken by surprise when that Omicron wave really hit us just around Christmas. And yeah, I mean, it's still spreading, but I think we're beyond the peak now, fortunately. But yeah, it's disrupted a lot of people's lives, including yours, because you've been going through 4 months of different fitness challenges for us. And your final one, because of COVID, got a little bit switched up, I'd say, because it kind of forced you to, well, take it a bit easy, right? Because you were stuck at home, you had to isolate, no gym, and you were more like going into maintenance instead of what we had initially planned, which was really a dirty bulk of being in a daily calorie surplus of, I think it was like, what, 1,500 calories?
No, it was 1,000 calories.
1,000 calories.
Surplus, yeah.
But yeah, more of that later. I've already cut into it, right? I cut through the chase. You've done quite a few fitness challenges for us. And in today's show, it's going to be all about bulking, right? You went through 3 months of bulking. Two of them were relatively lean. One of them was bulk. Then kind of had a detraining phase, which was also kind of interesting to see those results and how that unfolded. But yeah, I mean, walk me through the three challenges we had you set up for and what were the starting measurements that you had and where did you end up?
Yeah, so the three challenges that I went through were each a month long. So it was the months of October, November and December. October and November were lean bulking months in which I'd be in a 200 to 300 calorie surplus per day, trying to gain basically as much lean mass as I could without gaining any or too much fat. And the third month, so the December challenge, was, as we said, a dirty bulking month. And during that month, I was in a 1,000 calorie surplus per day, just trying to gain as much lean tissue as I could, whilst also not really being too mindful about the fat that I gained. For the lean bulking months, it was 2 months of lean bulking, but they were split into two kind of separate challenges. And each challenge was leg focused. So the first month was, I was actually following my normal program, but also kind of mixed in. My program was also mixed in with another program that was a glute focused program.
Yeah, I believe it was by Pratt Contreras, who is really known for his glute workout program, really focused on those targeted muscle gains.
Yeah, and I think he was the creator of the barbell hip thrust, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I followed his program as well. And that program basically has you training your glutes 3 days a week through different leg exercises, and then also training the rest of your body kind of on the days that you're not training your glutes. So for the first month, I was following that program. And for the second month, I wanted to also kind of target my legs, but I wanted to compare how his glute training program would work against squatting every day. So I basically did a squat over in November.
Yeah, and we had a little bit of discussion about that, right? Because like in the end, what was the goal, right? The goal was really like to run an experiment, how much of a targeted muscle gain can be really achieved by honing in on a few muscle groups. And obviously squats are extremely great for that because, you know, like you really train your largest muscles, you know, like you have the least amount of time required actually to recover. So something like squat over was actually quite viable. And it was something where we were expecting to see really some change that was measurable within a relatively short 30-day time period.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to like debunk some myths around squatober as well. And because I know growing up, I watched quite a few YouTube videos in which people would kind of undertake squatober and they'd make these like massive claims about how their legs, you know, like went up 3 sizes and, yeah, you know, they had to like buy new pairs of jeans every week because of like how much success they were seeing with this program.
And YouTube is full of those kind of challenges, right? Like some people doing like 300 push-ups a day for 30 days. Or, you know, like just bicep curls every day. And for some of those workouts, it just doesn't make a lot of sense because you don't leave yourself a lot of room for recovery. So yeah, if any kind of workout could be viable for this, it would be a squat. That was at least our line of thinking. And then that's why we had to go through that idea.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So that was one challenge, right? Like we wanted to really see like how much of, you know, a target muscle gain we could achieve compared to like your regular program, which is a push and pull program out of a lot of compound lifts, a few isolated lifts as well. But it was really an all body workout right throughout the week. Now, this one really added a lot more emphasis on your lower body. And I think we de-emphasized a little bit your upper body, but more of that later. So that was one comparison we wanted to have. And another was really that between the lean bulk of just being really near maintenance level of what is really advised in comparison to a dirty bulk, which is a much more significant calorie surplus of 1,000 calories, as you've mentioned earlier. And that's almost 5 times as much of a surplus as you ended up being compared to your lean bulk. And the whole idea is, yes, you would probably gain a little bit more body fat, but could you be able to gain more muscle mass in that process? And that's really what we wanted to find out with those 3 challenges throughout those 90 days. And maybe just to elaborate further on that, we really tried to keep track of a whole bunch of stuff. We took shape scans every day with our 3D body scanner shape scale, which is really measuring all your circumference measurements, body volume, body fat, lean mass, weight, of course, you name it. And we compared that with a DEXA scan that you took between every 14 to 30 days. And we also looked at some other bioimpedance measurements for good measure. And what else? We tracked, you actually tracked your nutrition through chronometer every day to make sure that you were following the same macros, the same energy intake between the 2 lean bulks. So they remained comparable in terms of nutrition. And also for the, of course, dirty bulk, we wanted to have that comparison, you know, like how much more could you achieve with that extra energy? And yeah, apart from that, you also were wearing an Apple Watch to keep track of your total daily energy, because we also wanted to look at that. And that, of course, gave you also the ability to make sure that you were in a certain calorie surplus. And instead of just guesstimating, you know, like how active you were every day, really used the Apple Watch on a day-to-day. And what else? We used the Strong app to measure all your volume lifted for all the different workouts that you've done. And then, of course, we measured, you know, like how did your PRs change in terms of rep max? How did your total volume lifted for certain muscle groups? And yeah, I mean, all of that, of course, yielded some interesting data. But before we go into that, just one thing, what were like the macros you were going for during the lean bulk? And how did that compare to the dirty bulk?
Yeah, so for the lean bulk periods, I was aiming for obviously 200 to 300 calorie surplus per day. And then also I was trying to hit a target of at least 200 grams of protein per day, just to keep it consistent throughout my challenges. And
remind us again, what was your weight at that time?
Yep. So at the beginning of my first lean bulk, I was 185 pounds. And then the second month, I was coming off of a cut, so I think I put on a little bit more weight than I would have normally. But for the second month of lean bulking, I started at 191 pounds, and then I ended up only 2 pounds heavier.
So it's about 1.1 grams per pound of body weight for protein. And how did your carbohydrate intake differ between the lean bulk and the dirty bulk?
Yeah, so for the lean bulks, the lean bulking challenges, I wasn't really too conscious about my fat and carb intake.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I went into the dirty bulk, I believe you found some data that, or some like some data from old school bodybuilders that kind of showed that it was actually more beneficial to, even though if you're in like a high calorie surplus, to keep your fat low and your carbohydrates quite high. So during the dirty bulk, I was in a 1,000 calorie a day surplus, and I was eating 300 grams of protein a day, and I was trying to, it was hard, and some days I didn't manage to stick to it quite as much as I wanted to, but I tried to stick to around 100 grams of fat limit, and then the rest of the calories that I had left for the day would have been made up in carbohydrates.
Right. Yeah. And we're going to make sure to include some of those studies because, yeah, I mean, we specifically looked a bit into the research around that and like what should really be your ideal macros to optimize for even more muscle gain. And it's a bit harder to accomplish that, of course, like to have like a certain amount of carbs when you're on a lean bulk because you only have so many calories, but you have a lot more leeway when you end up consuming, like, what did you have to consume on average? I think it was 4,200 calories every single day, right? So that gives you a lot of room actually to hit some of those macros.
Mm. Yeah, I think that was 4,200 would be, I think, on the low end. I think I was near 4,500 most days.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's definitely difficult to eat that many calories whilst keeping your fat low. Because I mean, if I could have just had, you know, like fast food, junk food every day, I think it would have been a lot easier to get the food down. But you know, when you're eating hundreds of grams of rice,
yeah,
trying to stay as lean as possible.
Yeah, I just found like the research again. Yeah, was carbohydrate intake of about 4.9 to 5.1 grams per kg. So I guess for pounds of body weights, for those that are not familiar with the metric system, that would be around 2.4 or something per pound. So it's nearly double the amount of carbs that you would consume in protein.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the results. So where did you start? You already mentioned the weights, but what did your body composition look like? And then after the three rounds of bulking, 90 days, it's a little bit more than 90 days because of COVID. You had to isolate, so you had to come in for some of those tests 2 weeks later. So it's what, like 105 days or something. But where did you end up with from October 1st, I believe, all the way to January 18th?
Yes. So I started off in October at 185.9 pounds total mass. I had 35.8 pounds of fat tissue and 142.6 pounds of lean tissue. And then at the end of all the challenges, I ended up, in October as well, I was 19.3% body fat. And then at the end of the three challenges, I was 20.8% body fat, 193.7 pounds total mass. So roughly 8-ish pounds heavier. I had 40 pounds of fat, which was, I believe, 5 pounds up from my starting point. And I had 146 pounds of lean tissue, which was around 4 to 5 pounds more of lean mass.
Nice. So in total, 4 to 5 pounds more lean mass. And how much more fat did you gain?
Across all three challenges, it was pretty similar. So it was about 5 pounds of fat tissue.
So almost like a 1-to-1 ratio between lean mass and body fat. And when we say lean mass, that's really not any lean mass including bone mass, right? That's really
mostly muscle tissue.
Yeah
My I've actually got it here. My bone mass actually went down by 0.05 of a gram. So
yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it still of course includes like your skins and some other factors, and water is another one which can sometimes lead to some fluctuations, but all in all, it does sound like some solid gains. But how did it differ? And maybe we can start by looking at the two lean bulks, the first 60 days between October and December. Was there like anything different in terms of the gains that you have made during those two 30-day periods?
Yeah, definitely. So for the first challenge, for the first month of lean bulking, I gained a lot more fat for that first month than I did for the second month. And likewise, I gained a lot more, to the opposite, I gained a lot more lean mass during the second month than I did the first month, which is quite interesting because you'd expect to see more lean mass gained, I guess, with more fat gained. But
and why do you think that was?
I think I gained fat because I didn't, so I was coming off of a cut, which was the first challenge that I did, in which I was in quite a harsh kind of calorie deficit. And so I went from this harsh calorie deficit that I'd been in for a month straight to a calorie surplus without kind of any adjustment period. So I think my body was kind of holding on to these like excess calories that were, I believe, 1500 calories more than that, like they'd been used to over the previous month per day. So I think that because I didn't adjust, my body kind of just absorbed all of those extra calories trying to get the weight back up to, I guess, closer to what it was before the first challenge.
Interesting. And how about the lean mass gains? What was it similar then, or what was it just that you gained more fat during the first lean bulk in October, or was there also a difference in lean mass gains?
Yeah, so in the lean mass gains, for the first month, I only gained just under 2 pounds of lean mass for that first month, which was the kind of normal push-pull legs program mixed in with the glute targeting program. And then the second month, which was less upper body, but a lot more like squatting every day, I actually gained over 3 pounds of lean mass. So that was quite a big difference in the lean mass gained between the 2 months.
Yeah, that's quite significant. And let's talk a bit more detail, right? Because as we mentioned earlier, we of course wanted to compare the different lean bulks, but also the lean bulk with the dirty bulk. But within those two lean bulk sessions, we also wanted to see how much of a targeted muscle gain could you achieve around your legs as well as your glutes by going through these two different programs, one being Brett Contreras' glute program and one being the Squatoba being just done in November. And how did those results differ in the end?
Yeah, so for the more targeted, you'd expect, I guess, to see more leg gains in the targeted glute training program. But across that entire month, my legs lean mass only increased by 0.55 pounds, so just over half a pound, whereas the lean mass in my legs...
And what kind of targeted exercise did that involve, actually? Just so our listeners understand, of course, you know, like in November... you did plenty of compound lifts, from you know deadlifts to squats, goblet squats, barbell squats, also leg extension with the machine. But how did those targeted leg and glute workouts actually look like in October for you?
Yeah, so it was a 3-day program. So the first day that you train your legs, it was entirely glute focused, and you start off with a heavy glute bridge of three sets for like a heavy glute bridge, and then it would go into a cable kickback and a reverse hyper, and then a seated hip abduction. And then for the second day, which was the third day in the training program, it was more quads and glute focused. So you'd perform three sets on a heavy back squat, three sets on a relatively heavy hack squat, and then you'd do a Smith machine reverse lunge, leg extension, and leg extension. And then for the final day, which was the fifth day in the training program, it was hamstring and glute focused. So you'd start off with a heavy Romanian deadlift, and then you'd do a seated leg curl machine and calf raise machine. And I found it quite interesting as well, because even though you were training training your legs 3 days a week, which was, you know, more than I do in my normal program, with like kind of a glute focus, you never repeat an exercise more than once with this program. And you'd start off with a kind of like a heavy compound lift, but apart from the day that you'd back squat and hack squat, you'd never repeat the same exercise twice in a week. And then also, apart from those heavy first lifts in each session, the weight would really kind of like drop off, and you'd go for really, really kind of like higher reps with lower weight, which I thought would be maybe not as efficient if your goal was to build muscle.
Right. And just so we have the full picture, so you had 3 days of those leg specific days, and then you still had like some other push and pull workouts, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so I largely followed my normal push pull legs workout routine, but instead I'd incorporate the leg day kind of like routine into my push pull legs routine. So like the first day, for example, on the glute focused routine, the first day of the week you'd train your glutes, and then the first day of my push pull legs training routine, I'd train my chest and my shoulders. So I'd start my first day off basically with training my glutes and then my chest and my shoulders.
Right. And in total, you would be training how many days a week, and how much per session?
Yes. So I'd be in the gym for probably just under 2 hours, 6 days a week. And the seventh day would be a rest day.
And now fast forward to November, where you did this Squadtober, how did that routine differ? Was it still 6 days, about 2 hours a day, or how did that look?
Yeah, I'd say I'd probably spent the same or very similar amount of time in the gym as I did in the previous challenge. And I followed my same push-pull legs training program, apart from instead of incorporating the glute-focused training program as well, I'd also have 3 sets minimum of squats in every session that I did.
3 sets of squats every single session, 6 days a week.
And 3 sets on the days that I wasn't training legs, like only legs. So on the 2 days that I was training only legs, I'd do more sets.
Interesting. Yeah. And how did that actually feel in terms of recovery? Because it must be quite strenuous, like, to, you know, do squats every single day, I would assume.
Yeah, I was, to be honest, I was quite shocked with how I felt in the end. I was kind of going into it expecting for the first week to be absolute hell on my legs, and, you know, I expected my recovery to not be very good. But I found that actually the first 2 weeks of squatting every day felt great. My joints felt amazing, which was weird. They felt better than they would if I was only training my legs like twice a week. So I thought, like, when I started off, I was like, oh, maybe this is like great for my knees, great for my hips. So I was like, oh, this is, you know, this is something that I should be doing outside of this challenge, because it seems great. And my lifts were going kind of like through the roof as well for those first 2 weeks. And I felt a lot more comfortable on weights that I'd previously kind of like struggled with. And it's important, I think, to also note that even though I was squatting 6 days a week for at least 3 sets, 4 of the 6 days that I was squatting, I was going at like 60 to 70% of my normal working set. And then 2 of the days I'd go like a lot heavier and really trying to get my strength up. But on those 60 to 70% days for the first 2 weeks, it felt amazing. It felt way lighter than those 60 to 70% weights would feel normally. And then that kind of all changed after the first 2 weeks. Actually had a weekend off where I was in Colorado. And then I came back and kind of in Colorado, my legs started to kind of like stiffen up after, because I went a couple of days without squatting after I'd been squatting every day pretty much for 2 weeks. And then when I came back for those final 2 weeks, the complete opposite happened. And I felt my joints were extremely stiff and they were kind of pretty painful for the remaining 2 weeks.
All right, everyone, let's take a quick breather to thank our sponsor, Legion Athletics. Legion is the number one brand of all natural sports supplements in the world. Legion prides itself in selling supplements that are 100% transparent, 100% naturally sweetened and flavored, and contain no artificial food, dyes, or any other unwanted chemicals. Legion has a wide array of products, most of which I've tried by now and have already reviewed here on the podcast. This week, we will be talking about a supplement that we haven't touched upon yet, Fortify Joints Support. Fortify is a 100% natural joint supplement that reduces joint pain and enhances joint health and function. Healthy, functional, pain-free joints make your workout more enjoyable and productive, not to mention everything else that you do every day. This is one of the many reasons to be a stickler about eating right, training properly, and getting enough rest and recovery. Supplementation can help as well, and that's why Fortify was created. Last year, I was struggling with quite a lot of joint inflammation in my legs, and while sometimes it got a bit better with the help of physical therapy, the pain always seemed to linger around and come back until I started using Fortify. A few weeks after I started taking Fortify, all the inflammation and pain disappeared, and my joints have never really felt healthier and more functional ever since. So if you want healthy, functional, and pain-free joints that can withstand the demands of your active lifestyle and even the toughest training, you want to try Fortify today. The 20-Minute Fitness listeners who are new Legion customers can now get up to 20% off their first order. Go to buylegion.com/shape and use the code SHAPE at checkout, and you save 20% on your first order. And you get double Legion reward points if you are an existing customer. That's buylegion.com/shape, SHAPE. Coupon code SHAPE, again, SHAPE, for 20% off your first order. Legion, get ready to crush your workout. Yeah, and I'm just looking at your Strong data from the Strong app. And like I mentioned earlier, we've been tracking, of course, all the reps, every single rep, every single set, total volume lifted. And when I look at like your squats, obviously your Squadtober in November resulted in a lot more squatting volume. It's actually nearly 50,000 pounds lifted in the whole of November compared to just 17,500 in October. So that's nearly 3 times as much squatting. Now, when I look at all the other, you know, exercises around your legs and glutes, we're looking at about 77% more volume lifted overall in November between October. And that is, of course, enlarged because of that huge increase in squatting, because it is one of the heaviest compound lifts besides deadlifts one can really pull off. And even though you spend, you know, the same amount of time, of course, you can lift that way, way more in total volume than you could by doing smaller lifts, you know, like from the hip thrust, hip abductors, et cetera, and then the lunges, et cetera. And yeah, so that was kind of interesting because, of course, you put in a lot more volume in November between compared to October, but they were less targeted, right? It was mostly compound lifts. And how did that in the end affect your muscle gains across your legs as well as gluteal area?
Yeah, so in my legs during November, so the month that I was squatting every day, I gained 2 pounds more, over 2 pounds more of lean mass in my legs than I did in my legs the entire month of October.
Wow, and you mentioned like you were gaining what, like in total 3 pounds or something? So almost all your lean mass gain was made in your legs? Did I hear that right? Wow, that's incredible.
I think it was almost 3 pounds of lean mass was gained in my legs during November. And then I think I had maybe around a pound for the rest of my body.
Yeah, no, almost a pound actually in your glenoid area, which is really most your gluteal area. So that's quite fascinating that most of your lean mass gains were actually made around your lower body, whereas actually when I looked at like your you know, upper body, it was not a lot of gain. Actually, you had a slight decrease around your arms, trunk, a little bit of gain. So that was, of course, interesting. But how did that compare to October, where you lifted about 80% less in volume around your legs and glutes?
Yeah, so compared to October, I mean, I gained a lot more lean mass in November in my legs and my glutes. But I think I also gained more in my upper body than I did in November.
Interesting. And I mean, like when we looked at your arms and chest and back and arms, it turned out actually that you lifted about between 20 to 25% less around those muscle groups. And you didn't even realize at the time, right?
No, I didn't realize. And it was really interesting to kind of like look back at that data as well, because if you'd kind of suggested that or asked if I was lifting less in my upper body, I would have said no. But obviously looking back at the data, I must have been preparing myself for the squats at each session, holding back in my upper body, I guess.
And now when you look at your one rep max for some of the compound lifts that you did in between October and November and around your lower body as well as your upper body, how did that differ?
Yeah, so my one rep max is for my lower body. So my leg exercises, they kind of plateaued in October, which was interesting because that was like I did a much wider range of leg exercises during October than I did November. But then those strength gains came back, and you can see like the highest or the biggest difference in November.
Yeah.
When I was squatting every day.
Actually, on that note, and I haven't really looked at the data around that, but would you say, just if you were to guesstimate, like in terms of squatting, did you do more squatting than before October when you were on your regular routine and back in September?
As in, could I squat more like for one?
No. I mean, like you mentioned you plateaued, right? I mean, like you're squatting rep max did not increase in October.
Yeah.
Did you actually cut down on squatting in that month compared to your regular routine?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I did. So the glute program that I was on, I want to talk about this as well, because I thought it was quite interesting. And the glute program that I was on was a 3-day leg program, but you never repeated any of the exercises more than once in the week, which I thought was interesting because it's quite hard to kind of progress in a lift when you're only doing it once a week, because I don't know, it feels kind of alien to, or if it doesn't feel like you're used to it. I thought, and especially because a lot of the exercises in this like 3-day glute program were a lot lighter as well. Yeah, I just didn't really see how you could make much strength or lean mass gains. And yeah, as to your question, I was only squatting once a week in this 3-day program, as opposed to twice a week in my normal program.
Gotcha. So for our listeners who are maybe keen around, making some targeted muscle gains, specifically around their lower body, but maybe also some other areas, What is there like to take away from the findings of those two challenges, in your opinion?
I think from the first challenge, if you're going to follow the it, well, if your goal is to increase the lean mass in your glutes and to essentially get your legs bigger and more toned, then I think follow a program that it's a lot easier to kind of progressively overload with, because that is how you're going to build muscle. So a program that you repeat kind of a core set of lifts, heavy lifts multiple times a week. And I'd say for the second month, so with the squatting every day, I definitely think it was worth it. And I definitely made a lot more leg gains in that month than I probably have in any other month of my life. But I think it's also important to be careful with your joints. And, you know, if your body's kind of had enough or telling you no, then, you know, it's okay to throw in the towel. But I think I definitely don't regret those first 2 weeks, because I think I definitely made tremendous lean mass gains.
Now, when I looked at your data, I think it just speaks to the power of heavy compound lifts, specifically Olympic lifts, like deadlifts, like squatting, because it just really allows you to lift the maximum amount of volume in the shortest period of time. And that, of course, I mean, you can see it in the data. I mean, even though you just lifted 80% more in total volume, you still had nearly 5x the amount of lean mass gain. And again, mm-hmm. listeners, I mean, we're talking here about lean mass, so it does include some fluctuation potentially in water intake. But, you know, of course, we try to have Nick come in at the same time for the scans that he took. So we would like to think that there's relatively little variance, but there's always room for some variance because of that. But still, nevertheless, it's 5 times the amount of lean muscle gained, and most of that really around his legs. So that is really incredible. Now, again, this is really just pure muscle gain. This is not something around, I would say, achieving a certain shape or sculpting, which is something that really, you know, that workout from Pat Quinteros also focuses on. So I think that's a bit more specific to achieve a certain shape. When you do a compound lift like that, there's only so much control I think you have around shaping your butt or your legs. If that's like one of your primary goals, then that may not be the best way to go about it then. But if we talk about pure muscle gains, really the Squatora pulled it off. Yeah, I mean, anything else to take away from there? I mean, like in the future, anything that you change now around your regular routine now after you've gone through that initial experiment?
Oh, yeah. No, I think personally, I'm going to squat a lot more than I was before. And like, so yeah, I did actually go up a jean size. So
nice.
I guess those accounts weren't entirely false. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And then I think also as well, like just to build pure muscle and just get as much mass as possible, I think squatting is a great exercise.
Which makes me wonder if that doesn't really open the door for like another experiment around, like, I don't know, deadlifting every day or something like that, or pull-ups every day. I'm sure pull-ups has been done many, many times. But yeah, that would be another story. But let's talk about your lean bulk in comparison to the dirty bulk, right? Because again, most people would advise you to go for a lean bulk because you gain relatively little of additional body fat in comparison to lean mass, which, you know, of course, can be more efficient, but you gain technically a little bit less in lean mass over time compared to a dirty bulk. But, you know, it saves you the time of having to go through a cut every, you know, month or two, which is definitely a nice thing to do. But, you know, you have to be also more precise, right? Because you really, I mean, you were tracking pretty hardcore all your calories, and you know, it's pretty mm-hmm. tough to shoot for something that's near maintenance level. I mean, that's really hard to pull off. Or what was like your experience around that?
Yeah, and even something that I completely forgot to mention was that during the month that I was squatting every day, even though I was in a calorie surplus and I put on weight, I think I put on in total, it was around 2 to 3 pounds of total mass. I actually lost fat, which is surprising, and I think that also kind of shows that the power of the squats and, you know, those heavy full body exercises have, because even though I put on weight, I lost fat. So yeah. I was like kind of restructuring my body composition.
Yeah, that's still kind of incredible, right? I mean, like, you actually managed to lose a little bit of fat while gaining a bunch of lean tissue in that process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now, like, in terms of like tracking the lean bulk, like, could you imagine even like doing that without nutrition tracking, like to be as precise?
No, yeah, I definitely don't think I would have been able to be as precise, just because it's such small margins, you know, only like 200 calories surplus. You know, it's a bit different with the dirty bulk, especially if you're not like sticking to like a strict fat and carb, you know, like intake level. You can just kind of eat everything in sight and you'll probably end up being in a high calorie surplus. But yeah, to get those kind of like small margins for the lean bulk, I think tracking your nutrition is definitely a wise thing to do.
And before we talk about like the specific outcome of your dirty bulk in comparison to what you've already talked about with the lean bulk, just tell us a bit more about like, how did it differ in terms of, you know, like your day to day? Was it a lot easier to adhere to because you were able to be in that massive 1000 calorie daily surplus, or what was it like?
It was, I'd say, it would have been easier if to adhere to if I, well, I mean, there's two aspects. There's like the kind of physical ease and mental ease. And I think, you know, purposely putting on a lot of fat isn't very easy for me at least.
Well, and, why do you think that? Like, because you're afraid you're going to be gaining like a lot of fat, or what is like that mental barrier there?
Yeah, and I think after, you know, the first challenge where I was cutting and I managed to lose, you know, like a certain amount of fat, and then the final the challenge just before the dirty bulk where I actually managed to get leaner even though I put on weight. Yeah, I think kind of going from seeing that progress to then like kind of reversing it back to the dirty bulk was just like mentally tough.
But was it also like difficult, you know, when it came to your meals, or was it actually something that you were enjoying because you had a greater allowance of what you could eat?
Yeah, so I'd say it was actually more difficult to eat during the dirty bulk than the lean bulk.
Why is that?
Mostly because during the lean bulk, I wasn't limited to a certain amount of fat and a certain amount of carbs. And so with the dirty bulk, I think it would have been a lot easier if I wasn't limiting my fat intake. But because I was trying to keep it under 100, I was having to eat, you know, like a mass quantities of like really lean food. So, I mean, it was a lot of chicken, a lot of rice, and a lot of vegetables. And I think that I was telling my friend that
it's kind of interesting, high protein, high carb, but low fat. Whereas like for the lean bulk, you were just going high protein and you didn't really care too much about fats and carbs.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it's funny because I'd go as far to say that I was probably eating healthier during my dirty bulk than I was for my lean bulk. Yeah. Even though, you know, I was eating so much more.
Don't expect that. Huh. And then how did that make a difference then? Because like our line of thinking was, of course, it's going to give your muscle a lot more glycogen supply. It's going to make you a lot more competitive when it came to your lifts. Did you feel any of that?
Yeah, definitely. I upper body wise, because I kind of plateaued a little bit in November, you know, for the reasons that we discussed. When I then went into the December dirty bulk challenge, I found that my upper body strength was definitely kind of increasing, similar to the levels that it was back in October before the November squatting challenge. And also I found that the biggest difference was, so my strength was going up a little bit, or more than it was in November, but the biggest difference for me was my energy was a lot higher in the gym. So my rest times, I was able to cut down, you know, on pretty much every lift by on average a minute at least, I'd say, rest times between sets.
And then did that help you then in the end to lift more?
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't. I was probably lifting the same amount. Well, so I was lifting weight-wise, I was lifting a little bit more, but it allowed me to get my sessions kind of completed a lot quicker than they were the previous months, because I was ready to go.
So you probably spend less time in the gym then to achieve a similar amount of volume.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was seeing similar, if not higher, strength gains than I was in my upper body in October, in December, and I was spending maybe like almost half of kind of like the time in the gym. Like I went from averaging it around like 2 hours in the gym to just over like an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, like when I look at the data, you really lifted nearly the same amount as you did in November during that time. So that's still incredible that you've done that in less time. But did you never have like that feeling like, hey, maybe I can push myself further, like by lifting even more than you did?
Yeah, so I was pushing I was still kind of following the same progressive overload principles that I have been in my training. So each session and each set, I'd aim for, you know, like at least a rep more than I had like kind of the previous session, or I'd up the weight and aim for like the same amount of reps. And I was definitely lifting more, like, as in like weight wise per rep, than like the previous months, and with less rest as well, which I think is, you know, quite impressive, because it's two principles of like kind of overload training. There's the rest in between sets and there's the weight that you lift, and both of those were changing like in a good way.
But I guess at the end of the day, like there wasn't a whole lot more room to push the envelope much further. I think like you ended up lifting maybe a percent or two more in volume, but it wasn't significantly more of what you may expect by almost doubling your carbohydrates and still increasing your protein as well.
Yeah, but I'd say that's down to I wasn't changing the amount of sets. I was doing. I was decreasing the rest time in between each set, so like the sessions were more intensive.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the results, because like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, COVID came. It really threw you off. And tell me more about how that unfolded.
Yeah, so I started off the Dirty Bulking Challenge on the 3rd of December at the end of the November challenge, in which I was squatting every day. And
just before you actually continue, like our line of thinking was, okay, you were going to be in this 1,000 calorie surplus a day, so 7,000 a week, give or take, you would gain maybe 1 to 1.5 pounds, maybe even a little bit more, depending on like how efficient your body is and really transforming that into new weight of body weight every single week. So maybe at the end of the month, you would end up gaining anywhere between 6 to 10 pounds in body weight. And you know, first couple of weeks, did that actually turn out to be the case, or what was that like?
Yeah, so for the first couple of weeks, it went kind of as expected. I put on, I think it was just over 4 pounds of body weight. Yeah, after the first 2 weeks, and then the second 2 weeks, it was the Christmas break, so I wasn't able to weigh myself. I wasn't able to, weigh myself every day. But I did manage to weigh myself towards the end of the challenge. I think I had maybe 5 or 6 days left, and I'd put on an extra like 4-ish pounds since that previous weigh-in. So I was all in all, I'd say around 8 pounds heavier than I was at the beginning of the session, or at the beginning of the challenge.
And how did that reflect in terms of body composition change? Because that was quite a surprise. Because just so that our listeners understand, how many days were you stuck at home where you couldn't actually train in the gym, and you were basically detraining? How many days was that?
Yeah, so I had a week where I had about 6 days where I was in bed pretty much all day, like not, so
not
really
even
moving.
Like any slightest movement.
No,
stuck
yeah,
in bed.
Not moving, stuck in my room. I mean, it's a pretty small room, so there's not really much room for movement anywhere. But yeah, stuck in my room. My nutrition kind of for that week just went out the window because I couldn't really go out and like buy groceries, and my protein intake and my carb intake, everything just plummeted basically for those 6 days. And then I had...
But you were still around maintenance level, or you were below maintenance, you were in a deficit?
So for the first few days, I'd say the first like 3-4 days, I was in quite a big deficit. Mm. And then the following week, probably after those like 4 days, because it was like 10 days in total, the following week after those 4 days, I was at maintenance, but my protein intake was probably nowhere near where as high as it should have been.
Gotcha. So how many days in total, no gym, and then just like in terms of light nutrition, like you were basically no longer in a surplus for how many days?
Yeah, so I was no longer in a surplus for about, well, I wasn't in a surplus after that because it was supposed to be the end of the challenge. So kind of when I got COVID, I went into a deficit for those like 4 days that I was like quite ill. And then I went into I was eating what I assumed would be my maintenance level based off of my BMR. And then, so that was for 10 days where my nutrition wasn't great. But it was 4 days deficit, 6 days maintenance, but with very low protein intake. And then after that, I got back in the gym after the 10th day. And then...
So 10 days detrained and 10 days poor nutrition, basically.
Yeah, and then after the 10th day, when I was back in the gym after the 10th day, I got my protein levels back to where they should be.
Okay, so without further ado, like, what were the results when you weighed in again?
Yeah, so I was supposed to weigh in originally on the 3rd of January at the end of the challenge, and because of COVID, I wasn't able to weigh myself and scan myself until the 18th, and for those 18 days, I was either in a deficit or maintaining my body weight, and I had managed to drop to 193.7 pounds, which was only 0.5 pound higher than it was at the beginning of the challenge, which was quite infuriating.
It is kind of funny, like you go on a dirty bulk and then in the end you gain almost no weight
whatsoever. Yeah, I gained almost no weight, and then I lost over 1.5 pounds of lean tissue, and I managed to gain over 2 pounds of fat tissue. So it wasn't ideal.
Yeah, so you actually replaced some muscle with body with fat. Presumably. So what does like the science say? Because we of course were curious, okay, like there was quite a bit of significant drop. Like also when we looked at like some of the comparative measurements, like, you know, like your shape scans, like you gained like what, like 3 pounds of body fat, and you still had like a little bit of skeletal muscle mass gain in the first 2 weeks at least. But then when we look at like the overall period of time, you were definitely down across the board, like when it came to your skeletal muscle mass, as well as your body fat went up slightly, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So I think we've put it down to muscle glycogen levels decreasing.
Yeah. So because like your diet was so poor and you were no longer training, your body was starting to deplete its glycogen levels, right? I mean, the body can store glycogen in your muscle tissue and also in your liver. And I think the research was saying 16% of muscle weight comes actually from glycogen levels. Now, of course, we would not assume that you would completely deplete your glycogen levels unless you were like in a traumatic calorie deficit and wouldn't take any carbohydrates whatsoever. So one could assume maybe, you know, like it lowered by 50, maybe a little bit less 10% than that. But, you know, when we look at like your overall skeletal muscle mass, I mean, that's still, I believe it was around 38 kilograms at the beginning of December, you know, maybe it was even a bit more than that in the end. Mm-hmm. And how much is that in pounds? So really bad with the mass. 38 kilograms, that's, let me check. That's 34 pounds, 84 pounds. So, you know, like you take off those 84 pounds, or maybe it was even, you know, a few more than that because you were on a dirty bulk for 4 months. So one could assume you gained some more of that. And then if that just drops by like 5% or 6%, you could easily lose 5 pounds in muscle tissue when you detrain. So that's actually quite fascinating, right? It's not actual muscle tissue that's being lost. It's just really the energy levels that you still store in your muscles for that explosive power that was depleted. So that's really, I think, a little bit the fallacy by the methodologies we use to estimate, you know, skeletal muscle mass, because it's not a biopsy. We're not actually cutting open your muscle and look how much is in there and how much it has changed. But we're really just looking at those muscle levels from a DEXA scan, which is a low intensity X-ray, as well as bioimpedance plus the shape scale data, which is correlating DEXA data. So at the end of the day, we can't really know for sure how that has changed. But one could assume because of that period of detraining and also nutritional deficit, your glycogen levels depleted significantly. And because of that, we could see a significant drop. And I mean, when I look at the data that is somewhat reflective, I mean, like when I just look at your skeletal muscle mass, not your overall lean mass, you dropped at least a pound in those 6 weeks, you know, like from the beginning of December to the middle of January. Now, you know, like if our theory would hold up and you lost maybe even 4 pounds just through glycogen levels, then yeah, I mean, maybe you were up by easily 2 or 3 pounds of muscle mass in that period of time in December, and then you lost it just in glycogen level. So now in order to confirm that, I think what we would have to do is, you know, keep you on a bulk for a few more weeks. And that should really bring up your glycogen levels again. And again, when we look at actually the research of detraining, it's actually quite fascinating. Like I couldn't believe it myself, but there were studies where people were left on a 24-week training program, and one group trained for 6 weeks and then took a break for 3 weeks. And then they went back to training for another 6 weeks, and then it took another break, et cetera, rinse and repeat. And then there was one group that just continuously kept training. And at the end of the day, though, their strength gains were nearly the same. And something similar was also found in actual muscle gains over that extended period of time. If you leave enough room for glycogen storages to fill up again over time. So that is actually quite interesting because, I mean, like we discussed it in a previous episode, like there is a certain amount of muscle memory, and the science still says that, you know, like you not really will lose muscle mass just because, you know, like you didn't train for 2 or 3 weeks. It only really starts to deplete after 3 to 4 weeks of the training. And you can even maintain it just by doing a single workout per week to keep just a maintenance level of your muscle mass. So that is actually quite interesting because I'm sure a lot of our listeners, including myself, actually didn't have as much time for training during the holidays, which is always a challenging time for many people, even if you didn't get COVID. But rest assured, it doesn't have a significant impact on both your muscle mass plus your actual strength. And you could already see some of that. So you've been back in the gym for a week, right? And you told me earlier before we were on in this interview on the podcast that you actually hit your old rep max record again for some lifts, right?
Yeah, so I've been back at the gym for, I'd say, 2.5 weeks now. And just yesterday, yeah, I'm kind of back with all three of my workouts, my push, my pull, and my leg workouts. I'm pretty much back to where I was pre-COVID 2.5 weeks later. And I think definitely in hindsight, it makes sense that my glycogen levels had dropped because that first week of kind of training back was terrible. And like my power had gone, my muscle endurance had gone, and like kind of, yeah, it felt that, you know, my strength had been cut in half, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's nice to put that down to glycogen levels and not,
yeah, so I know initially it was a bummer, you know, like that the experiment was a little bit of failure because of that, and you were also, of course, afraid that you were going to lose a lot of the gains that you made. Obviously, you put in a lot of work, 2 hours mm-hmm. every day for 6 times a week, and it seemed initially like, hey, all that was lost, but turns out that's not exactly the case, and that's really because of the glycogen and the limitations of how we measure muscle mass changes. Now, when we just look at your first 2 weeks, when we still had, you know, like some of your shape scans before Christmas, you were at the office, you didn't have COVID, I could see you had a gain of nearly twice the amount of body fat compared to the amount of skeletal muscle mass. And that compares to, you know, like in your November during your lean bulk, where you gained easily more than 2 pounds of skeletal muscle mass compared to just losing actually a pound of fat mass. So, I mean, you do the math, right? Like, I mean, there in the dirty bulk, you were gaining twice as fast fat as you were gaining muscle mass. Whereas like mm-hmm. doing the lean bulk, you didn't gain any fat. And in fact, actually you lost some fat in November. Though with the caveat, when you went from the cut to the lean bulk, you did gain some fat mass in that period.
Yeah.
But in the end, still the ratio between muscle mass gain versus fat gain was much, much better during the lean bulk. And I don't know, I would wager to say that it's a more efficient way to train, right? Because if you're on a dirty bulk, that means maybe you bulk for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and then you have to cut again for another 6 to 8 weeks because you gain 5-6 pounds of body fat. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that becomes even more of an issue the more advanced you get, because muscle gains become more difficult at certain levels, right? Whereas like fat gains, that never really changes. So it becomes even worse, that type of equation later on. And I think that's why it's even more recommended, according to the research and studies that have been done around this, that it should only really be beginners that do something like a dirty bulk, just because otherwise you end up with too much fat gain compared to muscle gain. Mm-hmm. But just from your own personal perspective, what do you take away from there? How would you move forward?
Yeah, I think definitely if you, yeah, you know, you can't train for a couple of weeks, or you do catch COVID, or, you know, get ill, then don't worry too much about muscle loss, because as I did, you know, I was very worried that I'd lose a lot of muscle, and it turns out that, you know, it's not gone, and it's just kind of more your glycogen stores that are depleted. And, you know, as long as you put in a couple of weeks of work after you've like recovered or you're back in the gym, then you can get back to where you were before. And also, I'd say that I found that squatting is a great way to change your body composition for the better. I found, and especially for me, because my legs, proportionate to the rest of my body, I'd say are probably a weak point muscle wise. Yeah, I think it's definitely, squatting every day is definitely a great way to put on size in your legs whilst also not like necessarily putting on too much fat that you would if you were dirty bulking.
And moving forward, how do you think you're going to continue? Obviously, you went through a lot of effort now with all the tracking, which is quite tedious. And as we discussed earlier, lean bulk is much more difficult if you, if you're not tracking your exercise or nutrition. Mm-hmm. But do you think it's worth doing that, or are you going to end up more in the middle, you know, like where, you know, you're going to be in a slightly higher surplus potentially because you're not keeping track of it, but you know, it's just more convenient for you to move forward? Or how will you go about it in the future?
Yeah, I think it really depends on kind of what your goals are. So for me, the last 3 months I've really been looking forward to cutting and trying to get my body fat percentage a lot lower than it is at the moment. And to do that, like, well, you definitely have to kind of stay on top of your tracking, your nutrition and your exercise tracking. So yeah, personally, I'm going to keep doing it. And I enjoy it, and it's not really too much of a hassle for me.
Do you feel like there's like a learning curve, and once you kind of have figured it out with, you know, like the nutrition tracking, you kind of have, you know, like your typical meals all programmed in, I'd say it gets easier? Or is it just always going to be something that's going to be a little bit of a hassle, but it's still worth it?
Yeah, no, definitely it gets easier. And I think that, yeah, over the last 5 months and the 5 months of challenges that I've had, I've definitely kind of become set on a few meals that I'll go kind of grocery shopping, and I'll have a set shopping list that I won't even write out, but I'll kind of just know what I need to get for these certain meals that I enjoy, and that, yeah, like that I can enjoy them and I enjoy eating them, but they're also not bad. Like, they're not bad for you. They're like good meals for you, so for your body, that is.
Got it. And yeah, I mean, like, for our listeners, anything else to take away? It's a new year, right? A lot of people will have something in mind, like either, and I assume most of us will want to still cut a little bit more body fat first before getting more lean mass. But just for both groups, what do you recommend? What are like some of the most important things that you learned that, well, kept you motivated, but also that gave you enough, I would say, data, feedback, or input to make the right choices about exercise and nutrition?
Yeah, I'd say definitely it's like keeping track of your circumference measurements is a big one, because it really kind of points you in the right direction, and it shows you whether or not what you've been doing has been successful. Because, you know, as we spoke about in the previous fitness challenge podcast, you know, like, depending on where you've put on like a few centimeters really makes a difference, or like kind of indicates the levels of fat that you've put on and like the levels of muscle that you put on. And then combining that with weighing yourself definitely helps to see, you know.
Yeah, because that gives you like the overall direction, right? But especially like in times when you wanted to make some specific gains in certain areas, I think that's where the circumference measurements really shine, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, I know for me, especially a big one was I wanted to, you know, like, increase the muscle mass in my arms, because they were, I think, proportionately smaller than the rest of my body, or like the rest of my upper body. And then, so yeah, I'd keep track of my arm measurements, and then also keep track of my waist measurements to make sure that what I was putting on wasn't in like solely fat or like proportionately more fat than lean mass.
And if you had a time machine and you could go back 4 or 5 months in time to talk to younger Nick about something that you learned during that time that would really improve your routine in one way or another, what would you tell him?
Yeah, I'd tell him that don't be so scared of losing muscle mass whilst you're cutting, because, you know, as we saw with that first challenge, I managed to put on lean mass whilst I was in like quite a big calorie deficit. So that was definitely a plus. And I think moving forward, I'll be definitely less scared to drop weight.
For our listeners who are right now thinking about cutting, but they're scared of losing muscle and they haven't listened to that previous episode of ours, what do you think has been the most important key component to allow you to maintain muscle, and now you even gained a little bit of muscle during that period?
Yeah, definitely. Just to keep it consistent.
What do you mean by that?
Just like kind of get into a routine with the gym. Like, you know, you don't have to go 6 days a week.
I mean, did your workout change? I mean, like, you didn't do any HIIT or cardio, right? You still did almost the same routine, right? 6 times mm-hmm. a week resistance workouts, even though you were trying to lose weight, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you still did all these lifts. And that really helped you to maintain, if even gain to some extent, muscle mass in that period while losing body fat. So I think that was quite incredible.
Yeah. And yeah, no, for the 5 months of that I've been here, yeah, my program stayed pretty much the same. And the only changes that I have made have been more because of like personal issues with like joints or like joint pain, or I've substituted some exercises for others that target the same area, but like a little bit easier on my body. And going back to what I've kind of learned from the whole experience as well, another point would be to, after a cut, to ease back into your calories. You know, if you're then going to go from a cut to like a lean bulk, don't do what I did and go kind of straight from a big calorie deficit to a small calorie surplus, because your body will really kind of hold on to those excess calories.
Yeah, and I think if you keep with the lean box, you will also have less times that you will really have to go through massive cut like that. And of course, for the sake of science, we set up those experiments to be a bit more drastic, right? So we had you in a much larger calorie deficit at that time. Normally, I think the ideal case is more like you cut 500 calories a day, because that gives you an even higher chance that you're not going to lose any muscle mass in the process.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely. And that's what I'm currently doing actually at the moment, is I'm in a 500 calorie deficit.
And just one final question from one of our listeners. She wanted me to ask you around your squat routine, if there was any specific squats that you would recommend doing, or whether that didn't matter at all.
So the only two types of squats that I personally do are back squats, barbell back squats, that is, and hack squats. And to be honest, I've only recently started doing hack squats since I've been here. And I found them great, because you can like kind of truly push your legs to failure, because there's not as much risk of getting hurt as there is in like the heavy barbell back squat. Like I'm definitely a lot more cautious to push to failure with barbell back squats as I am kind of hack squats. And yeah, it's really just kind of, I think, personal preference. Like I've got nothing against other variations of squats. It's just I've never really trained or like used them in my program.
Gotcha. Great. And yeah, listeners, that's what we'll have to do for today's show. I know we already went a little bit over time, but I hope you found it of great interest, as I certainly did. And if you still have any further questions, you can always feel free to reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram. And of course, you can also leave a comment on our website at 20minute.fitness. Thank you so much, Nick, for making the time and going through those challenges. It's been incredible to be a part of that journey and really see, you know, like all of that beautiful data that came out of it, and really like see how our own individual results differed from the science. Of course, it's always just a result of one. So it's not completely scientific in that sense of doing a randomized control study. It was different groups, but it was still incredibly insightful to learn from your own journey.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun, and I've definitely really enjoyed learning more about kind of what my body's capable of and how it will react to different situations.
And that was Nick Grohl. Well, that's it for today's show, listeners. I think we really had an insightful discussion with Nick, being the culmination of 3 months of experimentation. And now it's been a lot to go through. And sometimes it's a little bit hard perhaps to visualize everything that we've been talking about. And there were a lot of numbers. So we will try and still put quite a few of those numbers as best as we can onto the show notes in the coming days, which you can all find on 20minute.fitness. Nick's results definitely show, albeit with some surprises, that it is more favorable to go the route of a lean bulk, although perhaps one may want to increase their surplus beyond 200 to 300 calories. I mean, you really have to see, you know, what works best for you. And on top of that, Squattober, even if done in November, actually works. I mean, it was surprising, you know, like I'm never a big fan of like workouts that you do every single day, because I'm a strong believer in recovery. But if any of those workouts were workable, then it is squatting, because it's really the biggest muscle you have in the human body. So it does recover a lot quicker than a lot of the other muscle groups that you have. So Squattober was a big success. That was definitely a surprise to me personally. And again, I'm a little bit disappointed that the dirty bulk couldn't really be followed through entirely because of Nick catching COVID. But still, even based on some of the early data that we've seen, he did gain a lot more fat than during the lean bulk. So the lean bulk, it really is. And it is tough. It is tough to achieve. I personally don't think it's possible really to do a lean bulk without nutrition tracking. So that does add a layer of extra inconvenience. So, I mean, that's definitely something you should weigh into your decision, whether you want to go for something of a dirty bulk versus a lean bulk or something in between. Just be aware, though, that if you go for something in between, it probably means you will have to more often than not go through a cut. But that's always down to each individual's preferences, but you should definitely keep an eye on both lean mass and body fat, because it is really easy to also lose lean mass during a cut if you don't have any resistance training in your program, which Nick obviously had. And if you listen to a previous episode, 251, you can really hear from him how even during his cut, he didn't actually lose any lean mass. So it can be done if you put in the work. Anyways, again, complete show notes on 20minute.fitness. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kessler.io. And if you enjoy the show, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcasting app really is. Your review is super important in helping other listeners learn more about the show. And of course, your feedback is always highly appreciated. Also, if you think a friend or family member would get something out of today's show, maybe learn a thing or two, please consider letting them know. I'm Martin Kessler. 20 Minute Fitness is mixed by Lila Lasso and produced by Shape here in San Francisco. As always, thank you for your continued support, and until next time in 2 weeks.